With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Sabrina Halvorsen.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today on the AgNet News Hour. Coming up later, the importance of diversifying the prune industry with new varieties. But our top story today, specialty crops are once again getting a special focus in Congress with the bipartisan Specialty Crop Caucus. Co-chairs include Republican David Valadao of California and David Rouser of North Carolina, and Democrats Jim Costa of California and Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan. Representative Slotkin, a former national security official, says U.S. specialty crops are vital to the nation.
So because I'm a national security person by training, I put those lenses on when I look at my work on the Ag Committee and our work on this caucus. And to me, food security is national security. We need to think of it that way. We need to always be able to feed ourselves by ourselves. And for me, a big come to Jesus moment was during COVID, when, you know, supply chains were breaking down, shipping was breaking down. We should just always be able to feed ourselves by ourselves.
Representative Costa says the caucus is important for the industry.
But the reason that the caucus is so important, not only for healthy eating America, but it's also important for our producers. They've faced special challenges ranging from natural disasters, climate change, pests, diseases, and complexities related to market access, because these products, if you think about it, with the exception of tree nuts, are highly perishable. They're highly perishable. And so getting them from the farm to the supermarket to people's dinner tables is important in the supply chain.
The caucus will support the interests of specialty crop production by educating about legislative and regulatory policies that benefit the sector and by providing opportunities to address challenges specific to the industry. Its primary focus this year, opportunities for specialty crops in the Farm Bill. It can be tempting to plant the top plot performers across your acres, but one expert says that isn't going to help in the long run. Chad Smith has more.
LG Seeds agronomist Bryant Lewers points out that dealer test plots typically feature high-quality soil and best management practices.
Everyone likes to get sucked into the, hey, I'm going to plant all my acres to whatever wins my local plot, right? And that's the really easy temptation to fall into. However, most of these plots are on your best acres with your highest management, and that's not a real accurate representation of probably 80% of our acres out here that we farm, especially in Southeast Iowa with all the variability we've got. But in order to kind of work around that, what we like to do here at LG Seeds with our plant 3 initiative is really take a deeper look on every single acre and really take a dive on how we can diversify genetics on every acre and get maybe some of those products that didn't win the plots but are going to be super high performing on maybe that tough acre that you've got.
LG Seeds Plant 3 initiative is helping to get more farmers thinking about the value of bringing more genetic diversity to their farms.
Genetic diversity is something that is kind of an afterthought for us on a lot of situations, and so the Plant 3 initiative forces us to take a little deeper look into this, and it's been a great thing and a great tool for us. It really does make us focus on that more per acre product and get these products placed exactly where they need to be. And here at LG Seeds, we have an extremely diverse portfolio, and so it's been really nice and really rewarding, honestly, for me to see where these products have fit.
After heavy pressure last season, corn rootworm is certainly on many farmers' minds.
There's another kind of diversity that we can bring to your farm to really maximize your ROI, and that's trait diversity. As we look into the past 10, 15 years here, we've pretty much been utilizing the same trait to control rootworms out in the countryside. And so as we look forward here, we're trying to diversify those traits to basically elongate how long we can effectively control rootworms with what we have today. And so here at LG Seeds, we've taken a really strong stance of still having your traditional Smart Stacks, bringing in some Smart Stacks Pro, and then throwing in some Duracade. And what that allows us to do is go out on a multitude of acres with a high confidence rate and spreading out your risk for years to come.
One size doesn't fit all when it comes to seed, and that's why Lewers encourages farmers to thoroughly examine each farm and choose at least 3 hybrids.
Yeah, I think that is going to be huge going forward, that selecting multiple products to put on your farm. It's going to minimize your downside risk while also giving you a tremendous opportunity to capitalize on ROI. Here at LG Seeds, we have an extremely diverse portfolio, and I feel like we have the best agronomy staff in the industry. industry. We're very well staffed in that department. We all have a very strong knowledge of the background of our products. You throw in the depth and the breadth of our breeding and research program, and I feel like LG Seeds is really set up to help you guys in all your operations here moving forward.
To learn more about LG Seeds, one-of-a-kind genetics, and how you can put them to use on your farm, reach out to your local LG Seeds agronomist or visit lgseeds.com. Chad Smith reporting.
What are the factors behind an improvement in the most recent USDA National Topsoil Moisture Condition Report? Rod Bain tells us.
The latest USDA topsoil moisture condition numbers for the period ending April 7th indicate...
Nationally, we see topsoil moisture 30%, very short to short. That's a two-point improvement from last week's 32%. And we see 12% of the nation with surplus topsoil moisture. That is up 3 points from last week's 9%.
Most of the week-over-week changes, according to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, originate from last week's storm system that covered the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast.
In the Eastern Corn Belt, we're now seeing significant surpluses in Ohio, coming in at 68% surplus, also 35% surplus in Indiana. And then we've also seen some wet weather in the South. Numbers are above 30% surplus in Arkansas. 38% is the number for April 7th.
Rippey adds that some key ag areas still have varying degrees of dryness. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
You are listening to the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. With today's National Spotlight, here's Rod Bain.
The Agriculture Department's Economic Research Service recently crunched data to get a better idea of how global agricultural production has transformed over a six-decade period since 1961. Among those overseeing this study and reporting on its findings, USDA economic researcher Keith Fugley.
What this report tries to do is look at broad trends in global agricultural production, resource use, and productivity, how productive those resources employed in agriculture have been.
The report not only looks at productivity, but how ag on a world scale has impacted long-term sustainability from 1961 to 2020. First, from the productivity side.
From 1961 all the way up to 2020, global agricultural output increased by about fourfold.
With gross value growing from $1.1 trillion, with a T, dollars at the start of the study period to $4.3 trillion by 2020. Also changed over that same time period, increased diversity of products.
So some of the traditional things like root and tuber crops, cereal grains, they're actually a smaller share of that total output today than they were in prior decades. What has grown are oil seeds, fruits and vegetables, non-ruminant livestock like poultry and pork, and then especially we've seen huge growth in farm-raised fish, or what we call aquaculture.
Land in global agriculture grew 8% during that six-decade time frame. But what Fugley found interesting was the primary location of this growth.
The location of where that output is coming from has really shifted from what we call in the report the global north. That's kind of the high-income countries of North America, Europe, and then Asia-Pacific, like Japan and Australia. And it's shifted to the global south, Latin America, Africa, and the rest of Asia.
Irrigated area grew by over two times between 1961 and 2020.
It uses about two-thirds of the world's surface area. Irrigation uses about 70% of the world's freshwater resources.
As far as resource use goes,
agriculture has become more productive. It's reducing the use of those resources around the world. So we're getting a lot more output per unit of land, as well as per unit of labor, but also getting more efficient use of fertilizers. We're reducing the amount of resource of water per output, as well as greenhouse gas emissions per output.
For instance, the amount of labor dedicated to agriculture peaked at over 1 billion people in 2003. By 2020, that total labor force for ag around the world had declined to 840 million people. Meanwhile, the input of feed concentrates made from protein-dense oil seeds and crops has increasingly become an important source of livestock, poultry, and farm-raised fish nutrition over the six-decade period. To get a better idea of the balance between agricultural productivity and sustainability worldwide between 1961 and 2020, the report used a measure known as total factor productivity, a term you might have heard before, as it is the basis of Virginia Tech University's annual Global Agricultural Production Report. In essence, it measures what is produced commodity-wise versus the amount of basic inputs used to raise such product. Keith Fugley explains.
Today, most of the world is on a real TFP growth path where it's new technologies, better farming methods that are raising output and not just bringing in more stuff to produce that output. Now, that's not true everywhere in the world. Africa, for example, lags behind in shifting from sort of what we call resource-dependent growth to productivity-led growth. But the world as a whole now is getting more than two-thirds of its growth from just raising productivity rather than expanding resource utilization.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That's today's National Spotlight. With today's livestock news, here's Joe Sheely.
February was another great month for U.S. pork exports, and while leading market Mexico was once again the pace setter, U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom said strong global demand for U.S. pork is widespread.
February export stats continue to show significant momentum for pork globally, up 10% year to date, 14% growth in the month of February. We continue to see a dramatic performance by Mexico, but I think this month the real story is that there's a lot of other markets that are contributing to the cause. We've got Korea, we've got Colombia, we've got Australia, Central America. Korea in particular is exciting, I think, because it's starting to show the inevitable rebound of food service in Korea, which we've been waiting on for several months. So I think overall a very exciting month for pork.
February beef exports were down slightly from a year ago in volume, but jumped 10% in value. Western Hemisphere markets led the way, but Hallstrom also sees encouraging signs in the Middle East and in some Asian markets.
For February on beef, a very big month again for Mexico, almost 20,000 tons. But similar to pork, we're starting to see some other markets really contribute as well. Caribbean, I believe, had a record month, almost 3,000 tons, diversified across several different countries within the region. You had Central America with dramatic growth and South America as well. And I shouldn't leave out the Middle East, especially on the beef variety meats. And you know, you've got Asia stepping up on a beef side, over 5,000 tons for Taiwan, which is 15% growth after a slow start in January. February looks pretty good in Taiwan. And Korea, while down slightly on the volume side, the value side showed dramatic growth. So we're starting to see international tourism pick up in Asia, but it's especially apparent in the numbers for Korea.
For more, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
This is the Agnet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we will be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Coming up in a few moments, we'll have today's This Land of Ours report, but first, more of the day's agriculture news. And with today's Agnet West headlines, here's Agnet West Farm News Director, Brian German.
A new prune cultivar can help mitigate risk for the industry. Manager of the prune breeding program at UC Davis, Sarah Castro, explained how UC Yolo Gold can add important diversity to the industry.
Like what we saw in the last few years in almonds, but also in prunes with different freezes and different, you know, endless rain that we had last spring. Sometimes there can be crop failures when we don't have the right pollination during the right time of year. So if we had two different cultivars, this could really spread our risk as an industry to avoid crop failures in the future. And so there's the bloom component of it. There's the harvest component of it. Yolo Gold harvests 2 weeks after improved French. And so it could give you a little bit of a spread of, you know, essentially once you're done with improved French, you can just start in on Yolo Gold. Those 2 weeks starts a little bit of a wiggle room there. But having more than one cultivar, which is the normal for most industries to have more than one cultivar, could really benefit our prune growers to be able to diversify not only in their portfolio, but, you know, with their, to make sure that they don't have a crop failure statewide. If there's disease or something that comes up, more varieties lessen the risk.
Fresh Express Acquisition LLC, a subsidiary of Chiquita Holdings Limited, has abandoned its acquisition of Dole PLC's fresh vegetables division due to concerns raised by the Justice Department about competition in the packaged salad market.
Assistant Attorney General Jonathan Cantor emphasized the merger would have reduced competitors from 3 to 2, potentially increasing grocery prices for food products purchased by 85% of American households. The DOJ's threat of litigation prompted both Dole and Fresh Express to scrap the deal. Dole expressed disagreement with the DOJ's decision, believing the transition would have been beneficial. The cancellation highlights the significance of the packaged salad market, which amounts to $3.2 billion annually in spending by grocers and consumers. Despite the setback, Dole remains optimistic about finding an alternative path forward that serves the best interests of its stakeholders. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is seeking applications for fiscal year 2025 funding for 5 export market development programs. USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service recently published the Notice of Funding Opportunity for the Market Access Program, Foreign Market Development Program, Technical Assistance for Specialty Crops Program, Quality Samples Program, and Emerging Markets Program. The deadline for applications for all 5 programs is June 14th. The programs aim to assist U.S. exporters and trade organizations in promoting U.S. commodities internationally, building long-term demand, addressing export barriers for specialty crops, providing product samples to potential importers, and supporting technical assistance for emerging markets. Interested organizations can find more information about specific objectives and eligibility criteria for each program and submit applications on the USDA's website. Protocols have been established for keeping California dairy herds safe from highly pathogenic avian influenza. As other states grapple with the issue, CEO of Western United Dairies, Anya Radabaugh, explains the proactive efforts to protect cattle in California.
Any herd movement across state lines in California has always included a certificate of veterinary inspection. And so what we did is we asked the state veterinarian to put in some additional precautions. And so what the state veterinarian and the CDFA have decided to do is identify on the certificate of veterinary inspection that these animals are not originating from a premise with a confirmed detection of, it's called bovine-associated highly pathogenic avian influenza, or anything that is under suspicion or suspect the premise to be possibly infected with avian influenza. So that's that added statement also shortened the time that is allowed between a veterinary inspection and the movement. So that has to be done within 24 hours of moving them. And this order was given on the 5th of April. So it is likely that every single border station right now at the ag border has been made safe and that those border inspectors are up to code and standard. And they will be stopping people and fining people $1,000 per head per day if there is any high-risk movement of cattle.
The Western Region Certified Crop Advisor Program still accepting applications for its scholarship opportunities. WRCCA Executive Board Member Aaron Wingate said the online application has several questions for students looking to apply.
We're asking them to describe the coursework they're enrolled in and have completed. We'd like to know what year they are in school, their GPA and major. We also want to know a little bit about them other than just their classes. So we want to know if they've gotten any other scholarships or awards or any other special recognition. And we want to know if they're involved in any leadership roles. And then finally, we want to know what their pathway is in the agricultural industry. Especially, we want to encourage students to become certified crop advisors. So we ask what their plan is for becoming certified crop advisor and when they plan to take our exam.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
There's a bigger prize for top ag innovators. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The American Farm Bureau Federation, in partnership with Farm Credit, is doubling the top prize at this year's Ag Innovation Challenge. Chase Heineman, Director of Industry Affairs for AFBF, says Farm Bureau wants to ensure they have the resources to continue that great work, and so by doubling the prize money, AFBF hopes to double the impact.
The winner of the 2025 Ag Innovation Challenge will take home $100,000 in funding for their business. And really, the decision to double the prize comes from the realization that everyday entrepreneurs are working to address the challenges facing the agriculture sector.
He says the challenge is open to anyone with an innovative idea for rural America.
We're really looking for entrepreneurs from all backgrounds and from all regions of the country who can produce those solutions for our agricultural communities.
Interested entrepreneurs can apply now through June 15th at fb.org. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West. This is the AgNet News Hour. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news. The administration has major actions to enhance integrity and fairness in the food industry and banking industry. Gary Crawford looks deeper on this edition of Agriculture USA.
Are some companies using illegal and unfair tactics to keep prices high and stifle competition? President Biden believes they are and has launched a major government-wide campaign to do something about it. And we'll hear more about this on this upcoming and totally fee-free edition of Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford.
Capitalism without competition isn't capitalism, it's exploitation.
We've heard the president say that many times, including a couple of years ago when he created a competition council, a group of top administration officials with the mission of increasing the level of competition in many key industries. And then just a few days ago, President Biden and members of his competition council announced an escalation of that effort.
No matter how much money you make, no matter how rich or poor or middle class you are, you don't like being taken advantage of. That's why today I'm launching a new strike force on unfair and illegal pricing to crack down on companies who break the law while keeping prices high for American consumers.
To hold companies accountable when they engage in unfair and illegal practices that keep prices high.
An important next step in a fight against unfair and anti-competitive pricing.
Be it in the grocery store or at the pharmacy.
So this is very, very popular with farmers.
It's going to increase competition and put billions of dollars back in the pockets of American families.
That last voice belongs to Rohit Chopra. He heads up the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and he says one of the first changes we consumers will see in this effort will be on our credit card bills.
We're finalizing this rule that will lower the typical late fee charged by big credit card issuers from $32 down to about $8 in most cases, an average savings of $220 per year for the more than 45 million people who are charged these fees.
Now let's go to see what's happening in the food and agricultural side of this. First on food labels, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says right now there's confusion about exactly what the phrase product of the U.S. means on a meat and poultry product label. The same with claims about how the animals were raised. But Vilsack says,
we're very close to publishing a final rule that aligns the product of the USA label with consumer understanding of what that claim means. We're working on label standards and verification guidance for claims such as animal raised practices so that consumers can trust those labels.
Meanwhile, more on the competition front, the Packers and Stockyards Act, first passed way back in 1921, prohibits discrimination, deception, and retaliation in contracts and other dealings in meat and livestock buying and selling.
And this final rule will provide for a clear, more effective standard by which to govern all of this in the marketplace.
Agriculture Secretary Vilsack announced on a Zoom hookup with reporters a final rule under the Packers and Stockyards Act designed to help even the playing field for livestock producers in their contract dealings with large consolidated meat packers.
It's going to help producers receive protection against packers, swine contractors, and live poultry dealers who may be trying to terminate them on a pretext. For example, claiming that a poultry termination is on animal welfare grounds, or perhaps refusing to deal someone because they say their cattle quality is poor when it's not.
Vilsack later told a meeting of the President's Competition Council that the new rule, along with other steps the USDA is taking, will enhance market integrity and transparency and will help protect producers against unfair practices, to which President Biden asked,
what kind of a response you're getting from farmers?
Vilsack's answer?
Mr. President, they welcome these changes. For far too long, they felt that they were at the mercy of a relatively small number of integrators and processors. So to the extent that they now have more options to be able to process their cattle at local and independently owned processing facilities, some of which are farmer owned, to the extent that they know that they have a balanced playing field, that they understand better who they're doing business with, they understand that they have certain rights, that they can in fact seek a better deal. All of that, I think, is something that's been very much desired in the marketplace across all farm groups and across all associations. So this is very, very popular with farmers.
And Vilsack said USDA is working on a couple of other rules that will also boost competition in the livestock market, aligning with President Biden's view on that subject.
Capitalism without competition
isn't capitalism, it's exploitation.
This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington.
AARP offers tips to help rural residents avoid the latest scamming trends. Michael Clements shares more.
Scammers are constantly evolving to find new ways to take your money, and new scams are emerging that you should watch out for. AARP Oklahoma State Director Sean Voskel says it doesn't matter if you live in rural or urban America, scammers are finding new ways to target you.
Scammers don't care where you're from. They will tailor their approach against your demographic to sound as realistic as possible. And thanks to new technology, they are even able to mimic your loved ones over the phone. It's more important now than ever to be vigilant to keep yourself safe from scams.
Voskel says there are a few fast-growing scams to watch out for.
Be on the lookout specifically for check cooking when criminals steal checks out of mailboxes and change the amount using chemicals, or voice celebrity impersonation. No celebrity will ask you for money. Grandparents scams where the scammer pretends to be a grandchild in need of money. And don't forget about voice cloning, as it's a rising issue.
Fortunately, the AARP Fraud Watch Network, a free resource on the AARP.org website, offers many tips to help keep you safe from scams.
Be sure to always sign out of financial apps on your phone. Audit your wallet or purse by removing any information you don't need there. Monitor your credit report. Always set social media profiles to private. Use a password manager for strong and secure passwords. And most importantly, be skeptical. If you can spot a scam, you can stop a scam.
Michael Clements reporting.
Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows, or if you just want to catch the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search for the AgNet NewsHour on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet NewsHour, and it's available for Android and Apple devices. You can find it anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the AgNet NewsHour. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. For today's featured interview, Chuck Zimmerman gives us a preview of the upcoming 2024 Agri-Marketing Conference that is put on by the National Agri-Marketing Association.
I'm talking with Lori Kruger. She's with Signal Theory, and she's chair of the Agri-Marketing Conference Committee this year. We'll do a preview of what you'll find if you get registered and attend. Lori, first of all, tell us what you do.
I am a senior director of account management, leading our ag and animal health business at Signal Theory.
This year, you're the chair for the Agri-Marketing Conference that's coming up in Kansas City, late April, 24th through the 26th. So let's dive into it right away. The theme this year is Bright Horizons, and that's got to mean something, right?
Yeah, of course. Yes, it's pretty obvious. But I will say, I think we're all... I think at a point where it's been, 4 years since COVID, and it's like, okay, no more. Let's move forward. Let's look to the future. So I think really the ideal is to be a little more future focused with this, and thinking about what's ahead. So that those horizons that we have to look forward to, and optimistically, hence the bright horizons.
Okay. Well, let's go over the schedule, because that's, I think we have a couple of things that might be a little different in there, but we'll kind of go through there and just first give it an overview of the fact that we start Wednesday, and the chapter leaders and board of the directors meet, and of course we have a whole evening full of receptions. So yeah, what's going to get us started and into the whole program?
Yeah, well, there's a small marketers workshop, which is always a popular item and continues to grow and be an opportunity. Another thing we've added on Wednesday afternoon is a mid-level managers workshop. So really looking at those people that are looking to grow in their career and how they can do that. So we're excited to add that workshop to Wednesday afternoon to give people that opportunity to think about how they can personally and professionally grow in their career. Based on kind of that point they're at.
Yeah, you mentioned connection. It's Connection Point, and ZimCom will be there. We're celebrating our 20-year anniversary, and that's where we announced ourselves first back in 2004. So this is kind of a big deal for us.
To your point, yes, lots of receptions. Wednesday night is always a great time with the best of NAMA. So we're looking forward to the receptions, both the first-timers reception as well as the Best of NAMA finalist reception, and then the event itself, and then the the trade show afterwards. So that's always a great time to network, to connect with clients, agencies, media partners. So there's always a great opportunity to connect. And because it is the first night for a lot of people, it really is a kind of a welcoming time and a good kickoff for the conference.
Something else new, though, is after that that reception, right after the Best Sonoma Awards, we've got a thing called the Premiere Party. What is that?
Well, it's really just an opportunity, again, just to take the chance to network, especially for people who haven't been before. I mean, you and I talked about how we've been a part of NAMA for decades, but for a lot of people, this may be their first conference. So it's really an opportunity to connect and allow people that haven't been here before. Something that we're always trying to do and being very intentional about is looking for opportunities to make people feel welcome if they haven't been a part of NAMA for years. So really want to make sure that there's that opportunity to network and get to know people that maybe haven't been around for decades.
Well, we'll look on because when we get to the next day, this is where we have our first general sessions. And that's a big deal. There's some awards that are also given out too. So that's kind of a big deal on Thursday in terms of our professional development.
Yeah, we're kicking it off with two speakers that we're really excited about. One, to kind of get us kicked off on this idea of bright horizons and optimism, is how do we accelerate our performance without the burnout. Sunil Gupta will be the speaker there. Really excited to hear about that because I think we all are balancing a lot. We're in an environment where we're expected to do more with less. And how do we balance that without the burnout that comes along with it? So I think that will be a really interesting session and kick us off in a good way to get us, you know, get the momentum flowing as we kick off the conference and the sessions. Following that, we have Dr. Marcus Collins, who's going to be speaking on consumer behavior and unlocking the power of networks. While this is an ag conference, we know that consumers are a big part of what we do. And really, as whether you're a producer or B2B, we're all humans. And so definitely relevance there across all of our industries. So looking forward to hearing from Dr. Collins as it relates to unlocking the power of networks.
Welcome back to the AgNet NewsHour. We're listening to Chuck Zimmerman and his Zimcast podcast.
Well, during the rest of the day, we do have lunch in the Connection Point, and then that will close later on in the evening or late afternoon. Breakouts in between there, I would assume a couple of those probably with our speakers that might be doing those as well. So yet again, we have plenty of opportunity for networking throughout the day, even around all these sessions. And from there, we go to the last day. And guess what? We have a couple breakouts, a closing session, but another general session.
Yes. So Dr. Collins is going to have another breakout on Thursday afternoon. So there will be a chance to hear more from him and dig a little bit more into the data side of behavior. You know, a lot of times when we think about behavior, it is kind of disconnected from data, but really looking at how we can combine the two to help inform what we do. At the same time that he has his breakout session, we'll also be having a panel about content. We know in this age of lots of channels, we need to be as efficient as we can while still connecting across as many channels as possible. So the panel will be on making the most of content and how to be efficient, but yet have really engaging content that's appropriate for the channels that we're all communicating on daily. Following that, there is a couple sessions, one on Google Analytics 4. We know that's a big transition over to, you know, from Universal Analytics to GA4. So just making sure that everyone has the opportunity here and be prepared because the time is now. But how can they make sure that they're ready for the future and what that's looking like and even improve upon what the transition so far? And then refining relationships through social awareness and communication. We'll be talking a little bit within this session, really about some, again, going back to that personal growth and how to build on, you know, your career as a marketer. So looking forward to that one as well. And then, yes, Friday morning, we shift gears a little bit. Friday, it's a little, everybody's a little groggy, but we're going to have two really great panels on Friday morning. So hoping that that draws a crowd, because we have the producer panel. And I think we all know that the producer panel is a very popular panel, because we always love to hear from the farmers that are more often than not the end customer of what we're of who we're trying to reach. So we'll have a producer panel, and at the same time, we will have an AI panel. And we've kind of joked that for the foreseeable future, AI will be a topic of every conference we all go to. So we're excited to have a panel of AI specialist and people who are working with it every day. It's really a nice range of people, from agency to Accenture, so more on the consultant side of the business, and a large global company, and then also a professional who has created an entire company that reads animal faces with AI to predict sickness in cattle. So anyway, so really excited about that. And then we have our closing session to wrap things up on Friday.
Well, while this is all going on, we have students there, and there are chapters that will be doing their competition throughout, basically. And then Thursday afternoon will be their awards. So we always love seeing their products, their presentations. We can sit in and watch them if we want to. And, of course, we have professional members who do the critiques and eventually have the winners that they go through. So anyway, just glad to see them again, and wanted to make sure we mentioned them.
That's how I started my career, honestly, was as a student NAMA member. And I was sitting on the other side of the table from the professionals at NAMA presenting and being part of those teams. So it's a huge part of NAMA and something that I've been proud to be a part of, and look forward to getting back to judging here in the future. It's a great, great opportunity.
On the website for the conference, if anybody's interested besides the schedule, they can also see who's going to be there so far. And I scanned through that list, and I don't know what the number is, but yeah, it's a pretty comprehensive list. And there were a lot of new names and company names that I would have to go look up. So we're going to have some new people to talk to. And that's kind of what's going on in our business in the world right now. Lots of things have been changing.
Yeah, I think that's a win. I like seeing the new names and new companies. I think that's a win for NAMA when we can make sure we're growing and expanding and reaching a bigger audience.
So you can still register, and we'll just have to make a plug for that at NAMA.org.
Yes, please register. Yes.
All right. Anything else before we close that you might want to say to folks?
I don't think so. Just I'm looking forward to seeing old and new colleagues and friends, and meeting those of you who I haven't yet. So thanks, and looking forward to bright horizons together.
All right. Thank you, Lori. We'll see you very soon.
That's today's Top Agriculture News. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Thank you for sharing your morning with us.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Brian German and Sabrina Halverson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.